Hey, Mel, Bri here. Gotta work from home today because the whole family caught a nasty.
Daddy!
Hey, Mikey! If you're gonna puke, find the popcorn bowl!
But my availability is 110%. Coincidentally, so is my fever. Kidding. Mel, I'm so cold but hot. But I'm gonna get you that budget. Just as soon as...
Mikey! Popcorn bowl!
Press 1 to use Instacart and get your family's sick day essentials delivered in as fast as 30 minutes. Press 2 to keep working. Do not press 2. Just use Instacart, Brian.
What's the first thing you'd do if you'd had more time in the day? Take a nap? Read a book? Talk with a friend? When you know what's important to you, it's easier to fit it into your schedule. Therapy can help you figure that out. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy that comes to you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/grow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/grow.
This is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast with Richard Deitch. Multiple times a week, our podcast will get you interviews with the most notable names in sports media, from broadcasters to dealmakers to people doing great work behind the scenes. Here's Hubie Brown.
Anytime that you win an award, it's not just because of the announcer and the analyst. It's always because of the production team.
That's the Sports Media Podcast with Richard Deitch. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
eBay Motors es tu socio seguro. Con trabajo, piezas nuevas y mucha pasión, transformaste una carrocería oxidada con 100,000 millas en un vehículo totalmente singular. Juegos de frenos, faros, lo que necesites, eBay Motors lo tiene. Con Guaranteed Fit de eBay, te aseguras que la pieza le quede a tu carro a la primera o se te devuelve tu dinero. Y a estos precios, quemas llantas y no dinero. Mantén vivo ese espíritu de Ride or Die, baby, en eBay Motors. eBayMotors.com. Solo para artículos elegibles. Se aplican restricciones.
From the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor, 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course streaming live on YouTube, youtube.com/CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4CBS is number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter at Zach Gelb. That's ZACHGELB. Whole lot to do today. Got Ryan Botcher, got Moist Mike rocking and rolling all the way up until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. We'll have some guests join us along the way. Former Louisville player, now works for the ACC Network, Luke Hancock. We'll stop by 40 minutes from now. And then the former coach at Memphis and Georgia Tech, Josh Pastner, is going to stop by at 4:20 p.m. Eastern, 1:20 p.m. Pacific today. I got to start off with the Sweet 16 from last night. So when we said goodbye to you yesterday, I told you UConn was going to win and UConn was going to roll against San Diego State. No surprise there. I told you that Illinois, in what could have been a sloppy game, but it was going to be a close game, was going to win up against Iowa State. No surprise there. I told you Arizona was going to beat Clemson. That didn't happen. Big surprise there. And give all the credit to the Tigers of Clemson, and Chase Hunter was unbelievable in that game. And I was one of the few people that were actually on Nate Oates and Alabama Roll Tide up against UNC. And we did see Alabama find a way to be the better team late. And you saw Grant Nelson just take over the game, as Alabama has a bunch of transfers. And Grant Nelson, if you didn't know about him now, you did find out about him last night, obviously. If you didn't know about him before then, you found out about him last night, the transfer from North Dakota State. And Nate Oates, right, they had a good team last year with Brandon Miller, and that entire story, unfortunate story. And now you know so many newer players are in the program, and it's like, oh, where the heck did this guy come from? And it's just transfer portal, the natural nature of that. And Bama is now one win away from going to the Final Four. So I think the takeaways from last night, you could push aside Illinois beating Iowa State. You could push aside UConn beating San Diego State. But in a tournament that really doesn't have a lot of big names, that really doesn't have a lot of matchups that we were really zeroing in on. When that bracket did come out, if you are a college basketball fan and you don't just parachute in for this three-week stretch, a lot of people looked at that and they said, let me take a glance at the lower left bracket and I see a possibility of UNC meeting up against Arizona. And the reason why you wanted to see UNC and Arizona is because Caleb Love, who was originally going to transfer from UNC to Michigan, and then something happened with certain credits wouldn't transfer over. I don't even know if that is the true story, but that's what they at least told us. He then ended up with Arizona. So you had Caleb Love, and Tommy Lloyd has done a spectacular job the first 3 years in the regular season, and then come the postseason, it's been disappointment, disappointment, and disappointment. So here is Arizona again as a high seed. They're a number two seed. They have Caleb Love. And a lot of us were hoping to see Caleb Love go up against his former teammates in Armando Bacot and RJ Davis. And both of those teams, right? It'd be one thing if one team ruined the party, but both of those teams ended up squandering away that opportunity last night. And you see a trend with some of these really good teams that go down in the NCAA tournament this year. And it's bizarre. And I've never seen teams just blow opportunities like this in this tournament. You look at Kentucky when they lost. They got stuffed at the rim on a dunk. Could not pass the basketball. They were throwing it out of bounds. Auburn, when they lost, they were missing layup after layup after layup. It was crazy. It drove me bonkers. And you go back to Arizona losing to Clemson and UNC losing to Alabama. You had Armando Bacot. He missed the dunk right at the basket. You also had Withers, who is a 20% three-point shooter. You're down by one. As a little over a minute left in the game, whatever it was. And you take your first three-point attempt shot of the game in that moment. That's the best shot selection you could get. You know, I was dumbfounded by that. I was mystified. I got it. He was wide open. But even when he was wide open from three, he looked like Carlton in the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when he takes the half-court shot. And it's like the dramatic music, and then it's not even close, and then you hear, and his team lost. Like, that shot selection last night made no sense. And the most offensive offense was Arizona. Give Clemson credit because at the end of the game, they were the better team for the jump. And at halftime, you knew that was going to be a dogfight when they were up 39-31. But Clemson was begging for a 3-4 minute stretch where they couldn't score for Arizona to take control of that game. And it was missed layup after layup after layup by Arizona. How many damn layups were you going to miss? And not only that, there were stretches, because you couldn't make layups, and I'm sitting there from my couch, well, how many layups are they going to miss, where they were just taking these three-pointers, and I know Arizona's a good three-point shooting team, but how many wide-open three-point shots were the Wildcats going to miss? So it stinks that for UNC, this is how RJ Davis's career comes to a close, and you look at Arizona, we get deprived of seeing Caleb Love potentially go to the Elite Eight, and then we were hoping for UNC to be there to get that matchup. But it is stunning that last night, you look back at the numbers, RJ Davis, 4-20 from the field, 0-9 from 3. And then you look at Caleb Love, he was also 0-9 from 3. And him from the floor last night, Caleb Love, it wasn't a situation where it was all that spectacular. So it's just a day where it was just so unfortunate what did transpire. Caleb Love was 5 of 18 from the field last night. But you have that scenario play on out between Arizona and Clemson and then UNC and Alabama. And it's just one of those games where for UNC, how does a star player like Baycott miss that dunk? How does RJ Davis miss every three-point shot in the game? And then in Arizona-Clemson, it was just poor shot attempt after poor shot attempt. And then when they drive the ball, they couldn't make a layup. So that's the biggest takeaways. And I hate to be so negative, but that's the stunning takeaway from last night. It was a blown opportunity by UNC. It was a blown opportunity by Arizona as well. And the crazy part was just the poor shot selection and then just how close they could get to the basket without putting the ball in the basket. At one point in that game, I tweeted out Arizona and Clemson. I tweeted out, is Arizona allergic to the basket? Because it was amazing how close they got to the basket. And then when they got to the basket, they couldn't put the ball in the hoop. So a fun first night of the Sweet 16. And we will now have four more tickets to punch in the Elite Eight. And all those games will come your way later this evening. NC State and Marquette, Gonzaga and Purdue, Duke and Houston. And then in addition to that, Creighton and Tennessee. But Santer, I didn't know this about you. And I learned this about you last night. I know that you lived for a very long time in Arizona, and that's where you got your start of your radio career, where if memory serves me right, you went to a radio remote, or maybe the radio remote was at the restaurant you were working at, and you were talking to one of the people there, and then somehow you got in at the radio station, and that is how the great, spectacular, golden radio career of Moist Mike, Big Mike, CBS, Michael Samter, a man of many names, did commence. But I saw a tweet last night that, like, and usually Samter, I wouldn't say gets giddy about sports, because I do feel like you have a very tough sports fandom. But you were basking in the loss and another choke job of Arizona. So outside of just living in the area, why were you so happy? Why were you like a fat kid in a candy store, just going nuts when Arizona loses? And I don't think you're a Clemson fan. So what happened there? Well, what's the background story there?
I mean, very briefly, I lived in Arizona right near ASU. I worked for a newspaper that covered Arizona State sports. So I was a Sun Devil. You know, my college, Boston University, didn't really have much of a basketball team. No football program outside of hockey. That's all they had.
Unbiased coverage there, it sounded like.
So I had to adopt a team. And, yeah, of course it was biased. I'm all about the forks up Sun Devils, baby. And I have so many friends still in Arizona who are Arizona fans, big Wildcat fans. And they can talk trash all throughout the basketball season, but lately they've been able to talk trash because of your boy Jed Fish on the football season. That was the one thing that the Sun Devils had over Arizona was we had football over them. They had basketball over us. Mm-hmm. So every year, no matter how good ASU was, even when Harden was there and ASU was really good, no matter how good ASU was, Arizona always got farther. Arizona always did better. They won championships. They went to Final Fours. So for me, when
Josh
I go to
Pastner
the...
Josh was on that 2000 team.
There you go. So whenever I look at the NCAA tournament, the two things that make me happiest are one shiny moment and watching those damn Wildcats bear the hell down, baby. Bear down, forks up, baby. That's all I got to say.
So you look at the last 3 years under Tommy Lloyd. They were 33-4, right? And they ended up losing in the Sweet 16 to Houston, and they were supposed to have a championship-quality team. Then last year, as a two seed, they lost to Princeton, and that started the Princeton run into the Sweet 16. And then this year, you know, you looked at that part of the region, they were a sexy Final Four pick. They were one of my Final Four picks. I didn't have them beating UConn to advance to the championship game, but they were one of my Final Four picks because you just didn't like anyone really in that bracket. Like, even UNC entering this tournament, I didn't love. But I thought at least one of those teams would have been there. One of those teams would have found a way to meet up and be on the verge of going to the Final Four. But the fact that none of them got there is kind of crazy.
So here's a question I have for you. We've talked a lot about John Calipari. Now, he's been at Kentucky for a very long time, and he's failed many times over and over and over, despite having top teams and top recruiting classes.
Yeah.
Now, Hubert Davis's first year at North Carolina, he went to the Final Four. He ended up beating Coach K.
Yeah, they lost to UConn though. They lost to Kansas in the championship.
Correct, but they beat ended Coach K's career at Duke in the Final Four. They went to the championship game and lost. Last year, they were the number one overall seed or the number one overall ranking team preseason. They were number one throughout a lot of the season, lost 7 of the last 11 games, and missed the NCAA tournament. This year, they were a one seed and Sweet 16.
Oh, so you're going the Hubert Davis angle.
So my question is, at what point do we start saying Hubert Davis? Like, at what point do we start saying, okay, Hubert Davis, there's a little bit of mounting pressure on him. His first year, great first year, but, I mean, he's taking over someone else's talent. Second year, misses the tournament, despite being preseason number one. Third year, one seed, Sweet 16 exit. When does the pressure start to pick up for Hubert Davis?
So, here's the thing. I'm not really irate with the UNC loss last night. Like, don't get me wrong. You're a one seed, you lose to a four seed, but Alabama, we always knew they could score points. It was, would their defense ever register? And I know 89-87 doesn't seem like a defensive game, but when they needed to, Grant Nelson stepped up in a big way. Like, I can't slam Hubert Davis necessarily the coaching job in this one last night when Withers takes a dumb three-point shot and then RJ Davis didn't show up in the game and was 0 of 9 from 3. You know, RJ Davis hits one three-pointer last night. I know it's tricky to do this. Alabama doesn't win the game. So I'm not there yet in saying that he's on the hot seat or you gotta freak out. But you know what the standard is at UNC? It's to win championships. But I do think the first year gets him off to a good start. Then it got rocky. And then he was able to reel it back in because, you know, a lot of people heading into this year wasn't expecting UNC to be the number one seed. I didn't think they'd be a number one seed in this NCAA tournament. And here we are where they were number one seed, and it was disappointing. But I look at last night more so of a Tommy Lloyd conversation. Because Tommy Lloyd has had three great regular seasons. Three great regular seasons. And all three in the postseason have been disappointing, disappointing, disappointing. But I will take your conversation one little step further. I do think tonight is a big night for John Shire. Because like you just said, Hubert Davis, right, replaces Roy Williams at UNC. John Shire, who was on the staff, replaces Coach K at Duke. Duke last year was a sexy pick, and they went home early. Now Duke has a chance to punch their ticket to the Elite Eight. And I know everyone, if you're not picking UConn, a lot of people are picking Houston. But I think Duke tonight is alive. I actually like Duke outright tonight. And I know Houston, they survived up against A&M. They had the 10-point lead, and they blew it. The kid hit the great shot at the buzzer, and then they were able to pull away with basically like no one left on their roster because of all the foul outs in overtime. But I do believe Duke has a good chance to win. And you got the big kid in Filipowski as well. I would think tonight this is a big pressure moment. This is a moment where John Shire could show everybody, I got what it takes to do so in March. And I'll be curious to see how the Duke Blue Devils do respond. But last night, Arizona and UNC, that were the moments. Those were the two teams where even though I had Alabama beating UNC, where you are disappointed because of Arizona losing, but really more so how both those teams did loss with the poor shot selection, getting stuffed at the rim, and just not being able to hit layups. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. UConn continues their dominant ways. We get into the new face of college basketball, Danny Hurley, next. All righty, so on the left side of the bracket last night, we did see Alabama and Clemson punch their ticket to the Elite Eight. We also got to see UConn and Illinois do the same. Tonight, we will see Houston and Duke, NC State and Marquette. We'll also see Gonzaga go up against Purdue, and then the game I'm most excited for, the Blue Jays of Creighton going up against the Volunteers of Tennessee. We will know what our Elite Eight is coming up later tonight. And then we do have the Elite Eight games on Saturday and Sunday. And then Final Four will be punched every ticket by the end of Sunday. And we will have your Final Four coming to you on Saturday and then the championship game of Monday. And we will actually be out for three shows in Phoenix, Arizona, where Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week, getting you set and all geared up for the Final Four. But I continue to just look at UConn, and we know that Danny Hurley has brought the Huskies back. If you don't think UConn isn't a blue blood, I don't know what you watched under the great coach Calhoun, and then also winning that championship again last year just further enhances their blue blood status. And heck, they've won a championship already even before last year, even without Calhoun, when Kevin Ollie was able to win that championship. And then there was a lot that happened with Kevin Ollie, and now Kevin Ollie is the interim head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. So this UConn program is just a unit. This UConn program is just a factory. They are a force, and they just keep on pumping out W's. And I still don't see how a team beats them in this tournament. Illinois will give them a run. There is no doubt about it. Illinois is a better defensive team than what people give them credit for. And you got the two best offenses technically in the country with Illinois going up against UConn. And Domask has been a good transfer for Illinois. You have the whole story with Terrence Shannon, where he has a pending rape trial coming up. And this is something with Terrence Shannon that he's not speaking to the media. He's been advised by his attorneys to not speak to the media. And this goes back to, I want to say, December, where he was suspended for a bit. I was reading I did not know this part, how he got back onto the court. It was through a technicality in the courts through NIL that was able to get him back on a basketball court. And since he is reinstated and eligible to play, you know what happens in sports, even if it may not be the right thing, with the charge and the serious nature of what someone is accusing him, he's getting an opportunity to play. And I'll tell you this, and I'm not the only one saying this, and it's tough to ignore what I just said, but from a basketball-only standpoint, Terrence Shannon, he is the best player between the rosters of UConn and Illinois. Now, it doesn't mean Illinois is going to win the game, but I look at this matchup for UConn, and I still think UConn is going to win. But if UConn, let's say, smothers Illinois, and they beat them by 10-plus points, like last year UConn's closest game in the tourney was like 15 points. Is there going to be any game that they win in this tourney that is less than 10 points? I can't say so. Even with how much respect I have for Brad Underwood, and I love Brad Underwood, and he's done a phenomenal job at Illinois, and now they finally got to the Sweet 16, and now they're in the Elite Eight, and I liked them last night to beat Iowa State. I don't see how anyone in a sober state can seriously give you an explanation why UConn is not going to win it all. And I get it, right? They played Stetson. They played Northwestern. They played San Diego State. This is not murderer's row with the opponents that we're looking at. Now, San Diego State wasn't the championship game last year. UConn did not shoot the ball well up against Northwestern. Stetson is a 16 seed. Well, if you say that to Purdue or if you say that to Virginia, it may elicit a different emotional response. But still, the score so far, 91-52. When you don't even shoot the ball well against Northwestern, 75-58. And last night, did it even matter, the five players that San Diego State put on the court? No, it was 82-52. So this, the intrigue for me tomorrow evening at 6:09 p.m. Eastern time, when they throw that ball up in the air in Boston, can Illinois, they're capable of keeping this close, but will they keep it close? And Samter, right now, I can't sit here, even with how good of a team Illinois is, right? They won a Big Ten championship. You got a just tremendous, you have basically five forwards on a basketball court. Let's just call it what it is with the way Illinois runs. But their backcourt is the best 1-2 punch, you could argue, in the country with Domask and Shannon. And they have the best player between both teams in Shannon. I can't say, I'm not sitting here and telling you Illinois is going to win the game. And I'm not saying that UConn's not winning every game in this tournament by at least 10 points. Because they will. If Illinois can't keep this close, and I'm not saying Illinois is the second best team in this tournament, but they are a top five team remaining in this tournament. I just don't see who's going to be the team that actually gives UConn a run. Like, I'm not going to pick Houston. I'm not going to pick Duke. Even Purdue with their big fella in Zach Edey. I know Mark Few's a heck of a coach. Creighton's got four really good players in their starting five. We know Tennessee is the SEC player of the year in Dalton Connect. You know, Alabama, we know they could score with anybody. And Clemson's been a phenomenal story. But as I felt this way going into the tournament, and I sit here now with part of the Elite Eight already set up, and we're still in the Sweet 16 with four more games tonight, I feel even better. I feel even better about UConn than I did before the tournament. And before the tournament, they were my pick to win it all. What UConn has turned into, Samter, and what they've been able to do in the last 2 years, where they won a championship last year, and they weren't even great in the regular season. Like, they weren't a sexy pick. And then this year, they were the team to beat. This year, going into the tournament, it was clear they were the best team. And so far, they've been able to just stroll through this tournament. So I hope Illinois gives them a good game. Are they capable of it? Yes. And I gave you the breakdown of why they can't keep themselves in this game. But I can't sit here and say UConn isn't going to win every game in this tournament by at least 10 points. It just does not register with me, and I can't say those words into a microphone. That's how dominant they've been.
And honestly, man, like, I'm trying to go back. I'm looking at, like, some of the best teams over the past, you know, of the millennium, over the past 24 years since 2000. The ones that stand out to me, like the 2000 Blue Devils with Shane Battier, Jay Williams, Dunleavy, the Anthony Davis Kentucky Wildcats teams of 2011, the 99 Blue Devils with Elton Brand. There's a lot of good teams, but like this UConn team, they're just so well-rounded, and in a sport right now where there's not a lot of high-quality teams with veteran presence, right? Mm-hmm. Like Arizona had Caleb Love.
Yeah,
obviously,
but he's
Baycott was on UNC. We know Houston has a couple upperclassmen, but we don't see it a lot. And UConn is coming off a national championship. They're smoking everybody. They're the most dominant team I've seen in college basketball, definitely since those 2011 Kentucky Wildcats. But they might be the most dominant team I've seen this millennium. Like, they are just unstoppable. They had three losses during the regular season, and two of those came in December. So, like, since December, they've lost one game. They're just crushing everybody. And these tournament games aren't even fun to watch. I mean, 91-52, 75-58, 82-52. I mean, it's unheard of what Danny Hurley and what this team is doing. And, like, I honestly look at it, and if they win another national title, go back-to-back, we might start talking about this team, not amongst those UCLA teams, but amongst the best teams that we've seen over the past 20, 30, 40 years.
It's kind of like what Duke did.
Duke, where, UNLV?
Where Duke won a championship, I think it was in 91, and then whenever they went back-to-back in the early 90s, that first team was good, but then they were better the following season. And that's what it's like here with UConn. They were good last year, obviously. No crap, they won a championship. But now they're at a different level. And I said this because we had McDermott on, Greg McDermott from Creighton, because as Samter just pointed out, they lost to Kansas on December 1st. And then after they lost to Seton Hall on December 20th, and they were 10-2, they were going into that Creighton game 24-2. Think about that, 24-2. And losing in Creighton, I thought, was a good thing for them, because as you kind of seen with Kentucky in the past when they were undefeated, and, like, obviously you have a UConn team that's on such a long win streak, when you're on one of those ridiculously long winning streaks and you don't have a loss that happens, it just creates so much more pressure. And I get it. They didn't lose another game since after February 20th, but it's not like one of those 16-17 game win streaks we're talking about. And I think losing that game was able to, I don't want to say humble them, but just kind of reset things. And when you have such a dominant team, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to lose a game when it's obviously not an elimination game. Like, I look back at the Patriots, and I always wonder this, and the Giants just beat them that night, and so be it. But I always do wonder if they would have lost that final game of the regular season and didn't go undefeated in the regular season, if the Super Bowl would have been different, if they would have just lost one. Because when you have just such a dominant team on such a crazy win streak, and I know UConn isn't undefeated, you just wonder, can you maintain that dominance? And that loss to Creighton, I think, did wonders for that team. All righty, Luke Hancock will join us, formerly of Louisville. Now does a great job, ESPN and the ACC Network. When we return, update time first. Here he is, the Ackman, Rich Ack.
Hey, Mel, Bri here. Gotta work from home today because the whole family caught a nasty.
Daddy.
Hey, Mikey, if you're gonna puke, find the popcorn bowl.
But my availability is 110%. Coincidentally, so is my fever. Kidding. Mel, I'm so cold but hot. But I'm gonna get you that budget. Just as soon as...
Mikey, popcorn bowl!
Press 1 to use Instacart and get your family's sick day essentials delivered in as fast as 30 minutes. Press 2 to keep working. Do not press 2. Just use Instacart, Brian.
What's the first thing you do if you'd had more time in the day? Take a nap? Read a book? Talk with a friend? When you know what's important to you, it's easier to fit it into your schedule. Therapy can help you figure that out. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy that comes to you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/grow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/grow.
Hey everybody, I'm Mark Schanowski, along with one of the NBA's most popular analysts, Stacey King. We're inviting you to join us on the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast.
So join us every week here in the Hot Sauce Studios, where we'll be talking about basketball, football, MMA, entertainment, and unique viewpoints from a group of sports experts having a few brews. That's right, listen up on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Luke Hancock won a national championship at Louisville, obviously now does a great job for ESPN and the ACC Network, and he's kind enough to join us right now on the Zach Gelb Show as we have part of the Elite Eight. Four teams already have punched their ticket to the Elite Eight. We'll see four more coming up later this evening. Luke, appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much. How you been?
No, I've been great. Best time of the year. Been enjoying the hoops. Games were awesome for the most part yesterday. I mean, the UConn game got a little skewed there, but I think they got to flex a little bit, show the dominance, and then every other game last night was awesome right down to the wire. So best time of the year. I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Let me start you off, though, with Louisville. They hire Pat Kelsey. When their job was open, I said you should try to go get Scott Drew. He was going to tell them no and use that as his own negotiation tactic. And then after that, I thought either Dusty May or Pat Kelsey needed to be the head coach. I don't care if Kelsey was the third choice from some of these reports, but you heard him address the reporters yesterday. What's the initial reaction of Pat Kelsey landing with your alma mater?
Well, it's funny the way you asked the question, actually, because I think the initial reaction, starting with Scott Drew and kind of going down the tiers with coaches and the way this whole search played out, I think there were a lot of Louisville fans that were pretty disappointed to get down to a coach that wasn't maybe as high profile as Scott Drew. But I got to tell you, and I'm blown away by this, going into that press conference, I thought there was no way that Pat Kelsey could win day one. And I think he got an A+. I think he did a fantastic job in that opening press conference, just showing how the energy is going to get into the program. The turning point is here. I think people really embraced his message. He's done things like just going around the city and really just trying to ingrain himself in the community. I know it seems like there's only been there a few hours, but I'm really impressed with the reception after the press conference. And I can't overstate just how it wasn't that way as soon as he was announced. He just did a great job in a situation where I thought it might be impossible to win that opening day presser.
Yeah, and any Louisville fan that's not happy with the hire, I think you just got to have more realistic expectations. You know, I don't think Pat Kelsey is a bad hire, but getting the household name to Louisville with what's happened the last few years, I just never thought was really realistic, even with the brand and the history and the tradition that program obviously has.
Yeah, you know, in the state of Kentucky right now, we might have some unrealistic college basketball fans, you know, across the way at University of Kentucky. They're not too happy with that Oakland performance. And then at Louisville, I do think that there were some unrealistic expectations. You know, people throwing Jay Wright's name out there might as well have been throwing John Wooden's name out there. It just wasn't going to happen. But again, like, to have seen you start with that first choice in Scott Drew and have kind of work your way down. Dusty May, Richard Pitino's name gets thrown in there, and there were a lot of boosters and some influential people in town that put their name behind that, all the way to Josh Schertz at Indiana State, who just signed with St. Louis. And you get to Pat Kelsey, and he showed up and just delivered the energy, had a great first message. And I will say, I didn't know a ton about Pat Kelsey, obviously a great recruiter under the legendary Skip Prosser at Wake Forest, played for him at Xavier as well, kind of from a Chris Mack school of thought, which would probably puts a bad taste in Louisville fans' mouth. But, you know, he's recruited at a high level. Jeff Teague and company at Wake, he was a part of recruiting those guys there. And from Hall of Fame coaches that work with us at ESPN to guys who have coached in the ACC to just all across college basketball, the reception with his name was very, very positive from people that were in the know. And then, again, getting the fan base on board in that opening presser was so key.
Luke Hancock here with us. So you've reached the mountaintop of college athletics, winning a championship at Louisville. So you know what it's like to be able to survive in advance and then get it done on the biggest stage. But this tournament, more than any other tournament that I can remember, like you look at Auburn, you look at Kentucky, you know, missing dunks, missing layups. Last night, you had just so many missed layups by Arizona. You have Baycott just missing that dunk as well. That, to me, has been the mystifying part of the tournament, how close some of these teams have been getting to the hoop, literally at times touching the rim, and just not being able to put the ball in the basket.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. The pressure just gets bigger and bigger, and it really magnifies. I always say this, the round of 64 and round of 32 games are special. Just any NCAA tournament atmosphere is awesome. But every time you move sites, once you got that week to go back home or a few days to go back home, and then you play the following week, that's when it just ratchets up in terms of the pressure, the media exposure. You know, you're just so locked in and focused, it can tighten some teams up. I think it's going to be really interesting, especially tonight, to see these teams that maybe haven't been tested, have been blowing teams out of the water, versus teams that have had some close games, have had an overtime game, for example, and how that kind of gets you in rhythm. You certainly saw that with NC State in the ACC tournament, winning 5 games in 5 days. Everybody was talking about these legs are going to wear out, but the tournament atmosphere is different. And it was so impressive from Kevin Keats' squad that in the second half of all those games, NC State got better. Even big DJ Burns was more impactful in overtime and in those second halves than he was through most of the matchups.
Let me get your thoughts on Clemson. Obviously, no one thought they would be in the Elite Eight before the tournament did commence. And from wire to wire last night, they were the better team up against Arizona.
Yeah, I thought their poise when Arizona made their run was really impressive. Some of the coaching changes and adjustments that Brad Brunell made going zone and kind of mixing up the man zone down the stretch was really big. But if you were locked in on the game, some of the slip screen actions and the way that they were running their offense in the half court set, when jumpers were tough to come by, Brad Brunell did a great job of scheming his way into some layups. They had it on the out of bounds underneath. They had it on running Joe Girard off some screens where you're paying attention to the shooter. And, oh, the big guy slips right to the rim. The adjustments were really impressive by Clemson. And I just think them jumping out to an early lead and getting control of the game was so key. And then it was awesome to see really the X factor for the team, Chase Hunter, knocking down some shots, getting to the rim, making some big plays down the stretch.
The lack of offensive success last night for R.J. Davis was stunning. And I know in the Arizona performance, you saw the same thing with the former Tar Heel, in Caleb Love as well. I feel terrible for R.J. Davis with all that he's done for UNC, but what's the biggest takeaway a day later from how that Alabama and UNC game did play on out?
Yeah, you know, I went to sleep with the same feeling I woke up with, just how did they lose that game? They seem to be in control, and you really do feel for R.J. because he's been so good all year long. That was the only game of the season he did not hit a three-point shot. He was 0 for 9, and so was Caleb Love. The first time in the NCAA tournament, two guys have been 0 for 9 on the same day, and it happened to be some old teammates and player of the years in their respective conferences. But you'd certainly feel for those guys. They've done so much for Carolina, just weren't able to cut down the nets after a tournament, an ACC tournament or an NCAA tournament. But they've done so much. They've had these legendary careers. You got to tip your hat to Alabama and Nate Oates, just plan, you know, giving up open shots to certain guys early, but really locking in on RJ. thought they were going to get blown out of the water early in that game, but they stuck to the plan. They made a few adjustments, and then Grant Nelson was special. It's kind of why I'm so excited for the next game. You talk about versatility, bigs that can shoot it, that can dribble, that can drive, and do a little bit of everything. It's going to be electric when P.J. Hall and Grant Nelson get the matchup in this next round.
Talking to Luke Hancock right now on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. A few years removed since we've seen Coach K and then also Roy Williams walk away. When you look at the job that Hubert Davis has done and also John Shire, he has a big game tonight, could get into the Elite Eight. Just where are you kind of at with your satisfaction level with both those two guys?
Yeah, I think UNC's body of work this year was really impressive. You know, they get a one seed, they win the ACC regular season title. They hadn't done that, in 5 or 6 years, I believe. So I give them a really high grade. Nobody's going to give them an A+ because you only get that grade if you cut down the nets at the end of the year. And that was certainly the expectation for this crew. But I just think it's really impressive that Hubert Davis can bring in these transfers and get them to just meld together so well. He did it with Brady Manek and that crew a couple of years ago when they made it to the national championship game and just kind of ran out of gas in that last 20 minutes. He did it this year with Harrison Ingram, Cormac Ryan, Withers, all those guys. But, you know, the next step is going to be really interesting to me. Does RJ stick around? Can they build off of this young talent? And they got a lot of it coming in, both Carolina and Duke do. And then these are going to be the most sought after destinations in terms of transfer portal players. Carolina and Duke, those brands, what they can offer in NIL, just the exposure you get and the chance to win a championship. They're going to go out and retool and be ready to make a run next year. I have no doubt in my mind.
When we flip the page and get to tonight, I know you brought it up briefly, but I do like Marquette to beat NC State. I do like Purdue to beat Gonzaga. I think the two flip of the coins are Houston, Duke, and then Creighton, Tennessee. I kind of have changed my opinion in the last 10 hours or so where I'm going to pick Duke to beat Houston, and I like Creighton over Tennessee. Where do you kind of lie with those two games between the Blue Devils, the Cougars, and then the Blue Jays and the Volunteers?
Yeah, for some reason I'm with you, man. I've actually changed my tune a little bit. I had Tennessee in the Final Four when I first filled my bracket out. But Creighton, I love the pieces to the puzzle. Trey Alexander's a guy that's really going to go after the defensive assignment on Dawn Connect. I got the Creighton Blue Jays winning that one. I think they're really well coached, and I love the pieces. You know, great point guard play. Baylor Shireman can really fill it up, an elite shot blocking defensive center. Tennessee's tough. They got a lot of veterans, but I just think shooting the basketball and just having some legit scorers, and also that matchup, Trey Alexander, Dawn Connect, I think Creighton gets it done. And then the other side, you know, I don't know how many times Duke has to hear the narrative that physically they're going to go out there and get beat up until they decide that's not going to happen. It's never been more talked about than in this game right here, that they're going to go in there with a bunch of young guys and a bunch of soft players, and Houston's just going to backyard beat them up. I think when you tell those guys that all week long in your preparation and you just get them locked in and focused on we have to be the aggressors, that's going to favor Duke. And they have elite shot making and elite talent, one of the most talented starting fives in the country. The only thing that makes me nervous is the pace and the physicality Houston plays with. Duke, especially in this last few weeks of the season, backcourt rotation has been incredibly thin. They can bring a couple guys off the bench to help with the bigs, but backcourt guys to spell those three starters, the three-headed monster, if you will. It's going to be tough. Caleb Foster getting injured late in the season was really tough, but I'm with you. I got Duke in a close one.
Luke Hancock, before we let you run, here's the toughest question. How does anyone give UConn a game? Put your player cap on for a second.
Yeah, first of all, you got to do something with Big Donovan Kling, and he has been special, so dominant down there. They just keep coming at you. And I've been so impressed really locking into some of these half-court sets that Dan Hurley has these guys running. It is a machine. So I think you're going to have to shoot the basketball really well. You're going to have to take care of the rock. And you got to have somebody that can match up to some degree with Donovan Klingon in the middle, and you'll give yourself a chance. Although I think Tristan Newton may be playing as good as anyone in the entire country right now as the head of the snake for that crew.
He's Luke Hancock, does a great job, ESPN, ACC Network. We still acknowledge him as a national champion, even though the NCAA does all that bull crap, but I've screamed about that enough throughout the years. So, Luke.
They still gave me the MOP for whatever reason, but I guess, you know, we'll take what we can get.
Love that. Well, anyway, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks, man. Talk soon.
You got it. There he is, Luke Hancock, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Yeah, that really did annoy me when I was looking at the bio right before we put him on, and you see the asterisk from the stupidity of the NCAA, but hey, you know, Reggie Bush doesn't have his Heisman Trophy right now. They try to tell you that Louisville wasn't the national champion that year. My eyes tell me that I saw those things happen.
I find it interesting they didn't take away the MOP from Luke Hancock. He says he still has it, I guess.
Yeah, that's...
Well-deserved and earned.
If I was him, every interview I'm on, I would have that thing sitting right there just to remind everyone who won the national championship that year and give a big middle finger to the NCAA.
Next time we have him on, I'll put on the Chiron.
You got it. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
What's the first thing you do if you'd had more time in the day? Take a nap? Read a book? Talk with a friend? When you know what's important to you, it's easier to fit it into your schedule. Therapy can help you figure that out. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy that comes to you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/grow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/grow.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.